great victories in military history are where smaller forces, well led, achieve success out of all proportion to their numbers, using speed and surprise, often against numerically superior forces. Officer candidates at West Point are told that they must accomplish your purpose before the enemy can react effectively. Surprise is the most effective and perhaps the most powerful weapon in warfare, and it can decisively shift the balance of combat power. With surprise, success out of all proportion to the energy exerted can be achieved. Surprise results from striking the enemy at a time and place for which he is not fully prepared. Speed, cover, deception, effective intelligence, effective counterintelligence, variations in tactics and variations in methods of operation are some of the factors that contribute to the game of surprise. In Operation Desert Storm in February of 1991, with much fanfare to the CNN cameras which were being watched by the Iraqis in Baghdad, 17,000 Marines were loaded onto assault ships and moved into the Persian Gulf in preparation for storming the beaches at Kuwait City. Simultaneously, dozens of tanks and thousands of men were moved up to the border between Kuwait and Saudi Arabia in preparation for an assault against the well-fortified Iraqi lines. In response, the Iraqi forces moved 50,000 of their men forward to the beaches where the Marines would land and to the land area where the overland assault was coming. Suddenly, with no warning, 330,000 Allied troops sliced out of Kuwait to the west and across the Iraqi desert, almost without resistance, driving into Basra well behind the Iraqi lines and cutting off the entire Iraqi army, all in less than 100 hours. This brilliant stroke, combining the principles of the objective, the offensive, the mass, the maneuver, intelligence, concerted action, unity of command, simplicity, economy of force, security, and the principle of surprise, was one of the master strokes in the history of warfare. On June 25, 1950, the North Korean People's Army, numbering 100,000 well-armed troops, invaded South Korea in a surprise attack that sent the Allies reeling back down the peninsula and forced them into a small enclave around the city of Busan. This offensive by North Korea conquered three-quarters of South Korea, destroyed half of the South Korean army, and largely demoralized the American and Korean forces. It looked like it was all over. However, they did not count on the technical brilliance of General Douglas MacArthur. Against considerable odds and tremendous resistance from many military experts, MacArthur organized a seaborne invasion at Incheon, well behind the Korean forces, aimed at cutting the North Korean supply lines and taking back the offensive. The landing was a brilliant success, and within a few days it accomplished all of its objectives. The North Koreans, taken completely by surprise, were cut off and quickly disintegrated as a fighting force. The war went on for 2.5 more years before ending at essentially the same place it had begun. But the surprise attack of the Incheon landing was a decisive turning point of what had initially appeared to be an American and South Korean defeat. In World War II, as the result of incredible efforts at deception, the building up of non-existent armies in Britain, and radio traffic that was completely confusing and contradictory, the Germans fully expected the cross-channel invasion, what came to be known as D-Day, at the Pas-de-Calais, led by General George S. Patton, Jr. Then, in one of the most remarkable surprise attacks in history, the Allies instead attacked at the beaches of Normandy, moving hundreds of ships and thousands of men under cover of night and taking the beaches so quickly that the Germans were caught completely off guard. So effective was the surprise attack that the Germans were initially convinced that the Normandy invasion was merely a diversionary tactic, and they kept their main forces at Calais waiting for the real invasion, which, of course, never came. Surprise is an absolutely indispensable principle of victory in warfare. If the actions of the commander are not conducted in complete secrecy, the opposing commander will anticipate when it's going to happen and prepare against it, thereby turning the tables on the attacker. In business and in your career, surprise is an important tactic that you can use to achieve competitive advantage in rapidly changing marketplaces. Surprise in business today can be summarized in one word: speed. The purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer faster than your competitor can do it. Customers today are impatient, demanding, and disloyal. Their motto is, right here, right now, tailored for me, served up the way I like it and at a price I'm willing to pay, or I'll go somewhere else. In life, you can divide the situations you have to deal with into two categories: problems and facts. Now, problems are things that are amenable to a solution. You can do something about them. You can solve them, overcome them, ignore them, and even manipulate them to resolve them. Facts, on the other hand, just are. They are like the weather. They are simply things that you have to live with. They are unchangeable and immovable. Your customers' demand for speed today is a fact. And if you do not react rapidly to your customers' demands, your competitor will. All of business is a race to give your customer exactly what he or she wants and needs in the form he or she demands it at a price he or she is willing to pay, and you must do all this before anyone else can beat you to it. The customer's appetite for speed today is insatiable. Customers want both instantaneous and simultaneous gratification. In fact, for most customers today, instant gratification is no longer fast enough. Often, the customer did not even know that he or she wanted it until today, and now he or she wants it yesterday. Loyalty today is won only by dynamically serving your customers better than anyone else can do it. The expression that we use is real time. Real time means immediately. It means now. It means without hesitation. Real-time service is the key to winning and keeping customers. Real-time is the shortest possible interval between the idea and the action. Your motto in dealing with your customers for the rest of your career should be, sure, right away. Customers love individuals and organizations that do things for them fast. Whenever your customer has a problem or question of any kind, you respond by saying, sure, right away. This is music to your customer's ears. Even if you cannot actually do something immediately, you can assure the customer that you have heard his or her query and that you are taking action without delay. Peter Drucker has said that the purpose of a business is to satisfy customers. This means that the customer is always right. Whatever the customer wants, the customer gets. Your job is to find out what your customers really want, need, and are willing to pay for, and then to give it to them fast. Time is the currency of the future. Every single management breakthrough or concept is aimed at reducing the amount of time it takes to accomplish a particular result. And whatever got you to where you are today won't keep you there. In fact, especially in high tech, if it works, it's already obsolete. Any product that is on the market today is already in the process of being replaced by a new, better, faster, cheaper product that will be out any day now. Every day and every way, you must be continually asking, how can we serve our customers better and faster than our competitors, and better and faster than they've been served in the past? And each new speed record that you set becomes the benchmark or the starting point for the next speed record that you must aim at. You can never relax because your competition never does either. The good news is that you can dramatically increase the speed at which you respond to customer needs by, first of all, deciding to do so, and second of all, by using your ability to think more effectively in achieving that goal. And customers appreciate this more than you can imagine. For example, no matter how good your product or service is, there are going to be problems with it. It will not work the way it's supposed to work. It'll break down. It'll give rise to unexpected problems and frustrations on the part of the customer. As a result of product or service deficiencies, which are unavoidable, your customers will complain. Now, a complaint is actually a good sign. What is most dangerous of all is the customer who does not complain, but instead goes somewhere else. In fact, fully 58% of customers who changed suppliers said that they did so because of indifference or lack of caring on the part of someone in the company that had sold them the original product or service. However, when you respond quickly to customer complaints, you actually build customer loyalty, and you increase the likelihood that the customer will buy from you again and will recommend you to his or her friends. Customers are not unreasonable. They expect to have problems. The only part of this challenge-response situation that you can control is how you respond when a customer has a difficulty. When you respond quickly, politely, efficiently, and effectively, customers appreciate you even more than customers who have never had a reason to complain in the first place. And complaints are often an indication of the things you have to do to change your product or services to make them even more competitive and more attractive to your customers. The very best companies use a variety of feedback mechanisms to elicit complaints and suggestions from their customers. Microsoft Corporation, for example, gets fully 80% of its new product ideas from customer feedback, customer requests, and customer complaints. Hewlett-Packard has become one of the most successful high-tech companies in the world as a result of its virtual obsession with eliciting customer evaluations and responses. They send out customer comment cards, they do customer telephone surveys, and meet with customers individually and in focus groups to find out in depth exactly how they feel and think about their products. The developers at Hewlett-Packard then take these customer suggestions back and incorporate them into new research and development activities to produce products that even more customers want and will pay for. You know that today in our turbulent markets, change is the only constant. It is inevitable, unpredictable, and discontinuous. Whatever is already getting old. Whatever works will stop working, and far sooner than you expected. For you to ride the wave of change, to stay ahead of the curve, you always have to be thinking about your next move. You always have to be thinking about how you can improve what you're doing so that it is even better than it was before, even if what you're doing now puts you at the head of the line in your market. One of the best strategies, even if you are number one, is to always act as if you are number two. The very best companies act every day as if they were on the verge of losing every one of their major customers. They never take them for granted. They are hypersensitive to the wants and needs of their customers, and they react quickly to any customer problem. The very best companies know that the business of tomorrow is built on a foundation of rapidly satisfied customers today. More and more companies are insisting that their managers and executives get out into the field, face-to-face with real live customers, and listen to them when they talk. The very best military commanders are always going into the field, up to the front lines, to personally see and experience what their men are facing. The very best managers are continually going out with their salespeople to meet with customers and find out exactly how customers are reacting and responding to their product and service offerings. One of the great executives of the 20th century was Alfred P. Sloan, the head of General Motors for many years and the man most responsible for making it into the largest industrial corporation in the world. And Alfred P. Sloan used to take one day off each month where he would put on a sports coat and work in a General Motors dealership as a salesman, meeting and talking to customers and getting their opinions of GM cars and services firsthand. Many airlines now insist that their executives spend a day each month checking in passengers and baggage down in the terminal so that they can get a feeling for how the customers are being treated and how they are reacting to that treatment. The key to success in business is for you to achieve meaningful competitive advantage. As a small entrepreneur, one of the advantages you can achieve over your larger competitors is speed and personalization. Large companies are more likely to take their customers for granted than a small company. For a small company, a single customer represents a far greater percentage of business than that same customer would represent to a larger company. Often people will deal with you if for no other reason than that you promise to satisfy them faster than anyone else. Speed can be your differentiating factor, your competitive advantage. And customers will pay a premium for speed. Often, they'll overlook product or service quality as long as they can have it immediately. Look at the multi-billion dollar success of fast food restaurants throughout the United States and throughout the world. Tom Monahan was a young man delivering pizzas in a college town when he made an important discovery. People would phone in and order pizza, and he would deliver it about an hour later. Most of his customers were both impatient and angry. They were not particularly appreciative of the fact that the pizza was being delivered to their door. Sometimes they complained about how long it took to get a pizza once they had ordered it. Monahan had an insight that made him one of the richest men in the world, worth more than $1 billion today. It dawned on him, like a light bulb going off, that when people ordered a pizza, they were hungry. And when they were hungry, speed was more important than quality. He asked the people that he was working for if there wasn't some way that they could speed up the delivery of pizzas to customers when they phoned in. Well, he was told that a pizza took a certain amount of time to prepare, especially with 30 different combinations and toppings, and it could not be made and delivered in less than an hour. So, Tom Monahan sold his used car, rented a bankrupt pizza parlor, and began offering a limited number of pizzas, the most popular pizzas, based on his experience, and promised delivery within 30 minutes or no charge. In no time at all, Domino's Pizza took off. It became one of the most successful fast food franchises in the history of business. Look around you at your business. What is it that you could do right now to increase the speed at which you give your customers exactly what they want and need and are willing to pay for? One of the most important areas for speed and creativity in business is called line of sight theory. This theory states that in your line of sight, in your current job, right where you are right now, you can always see little things that you can do to reduce the amount of time it takes to accomplish a particular result or task. Sometimes it is as simple as answering the telephone within two rings and taking action immediately on any customer question or complaint. Sometimes it can be organizing everything you need before the workday begins so that you can respond instantly when a customer calls. IBM Corporation had a challenge a few years ago. An IBM salesman would sell a computer system to a company and offer to finance it through the IBM Finance Corporation. But it was taking 6 to 8 weeks for IBM to get back to the customer with an approval of their application. Not only that, fully 14 different people worked in the IBM credit approval department reviewing customer applications prior to issuing an approval or disapproval. IBM decided to re-engineer the process and speed up their response rate. Surprise, surprise, they computerized the entire program. When they computerized it, they found that fully 95% of credit applications could be approved or disapproved immediately. Only 5% required further investigation. Not only that, they found that if the IBM sales representatives filled out the information on an application form on his or her laptop computer, the application could be sent in by modem to the head office and processed immediately. As a result of these improvements, they reduced the time of approval from 6 weeks down to 2 hours. A sale could take place in the morning, a credit application could arrive by noon, and the customer could receive approval before the day was out. As you can imagine, this increased sales dramatically and almost immediately. The problem with most companies today is that they have too many products and services in too many combinations, at too many price points, being offered to too many companies in too many markets. If clarity is the key to success in business and in life, fuzziness or lack of focus is a major reason for failure and frustration. The more complicated the number of product or service offerings become, the longer it takes to make a sale and satisfy a customer with what he or she wants and needs right now. You incorporate the element of surprise and speed into your business by thinking through and deciding upon the one or two things that you can do that customers would appreciate more than anything else. Decide to make speed your competitive advantage. Remember, if you have the very best product or service in your marketplace, but it takes too long for your customer to get it, you will lose sale after sale to faster-moving competitors. At the same time, you must be continually looking for faster, newer, better, easier ways to sell and deliver your products or services so that your customers will choose to deal with you rather than with someone else. There are four levels of customer service in the marketplace today. The first level of customer service is customer satisfaction. This is when you satisfy your customer's basic wants and needs so that your customer has no real complaints. This is the minimum level necessary to survive today. The sad thing is that many companies and individuals think that customer satisfaction is a high point of achievement when it's really just a minimum condition. The second level of customer satisfaction is when you exceed customer expectations. This is the essential requirement for growth in your market. One of the great rules for success is that your success will always be in direct proportion to what you do after you do what you're expected to do. If you only do what you're expected to do, you are in an extremely tenuous position. You're setting yourself up to be knocked off by anyone who comes along and does more than you're currently doing. The third level of customer service is when you delight your customers. Companies like Nordstrom have developed a national reputation for delighting their customers with the quality of service that they give to each person. Almost everyone who shops at Nordstrom has a Nordstrom story of some kind, which they eagerly share with others. These Nordstrom stories are really word-of-mouth advertising testimonials that keep people going back to Nordstrom and cause new people to shop there. For example, when my son David was 7 years old, he came home one evening and said that he had to appear in a school play the next day with black stovepipe trousers and a white shirt. As it happens, he had known this for some time, but he had forgotten to tell us. By the time he mentioned it, it was already 8 o'clock at night, and David did not have the trousers that he needed. He was very upset and worried. He felt that he was going to be embarrassed and he would look silly if he didn't have the proper clothes. My wife couldn't leave the house and go shopping because we had small children that had to be taken care of. What could we do? Barbara decided to phone her personal shopper at Nordstrom and explain the dilemma. The Nordstrom saleswoman said that she would go down to the boys' department and pick up 3 pairs of pants and drop them off at the house on the way home. Barbara could then take back the pants that she didn't need at a later date. Well, our home is about 30 minutes north of the Nordstrom store. At about 9:30 p.m., when David was already asleep, the Nordstrom saleswoman arrived at the door with 3 pairs of pants. She filled out the charge slip and went on her way. The next morning, when David woke up, he had 3 pairs of pants to choose from. One of the pairs of pants fit him perfectly. He went off to his school play, absolutely delighted and convinced that his mother could work miracles. Now, here's the rest of the story. When Barbara took the unneeded pairs of pants back to Nordstrom, she spoke to the saleswoman and found that the saleswoman actually lived 30 minutes south of the Nordstrom store. The saleswoman had driven half an hour north to drop off the pants and then had to drive 1 hour south to get home that night. She had gone considerably out of her way, not only to meet expectations and to exceed expectations, but to absolutely delight her customer. This is the kind of customer service behavior that generates loyalty that goes far beyond the price shopping that characterizes most purchase activities. The fourth level of customer service is the best of all. This is where you amaze your customers. This is where you do things for your customers, similar to what happened to us with Nordstrom, that leaves your customer shaking his or her head in amazement. Remember, your success in life will be in direct proportion to what you do after you do what you're expected to do. Your aim is always to do more than you're paid for. Your goal should always be to go the extra mile. As you know, there are never any traffic jams on the extra mile. You should be continually looking at every aspect of your business and your activities to find ways to greatly exceed the expectations, to delight and amaze the people you depend upon for your success. As I mentioned in an earlier session, when I began my career as a young executive, I recognized that my success was going to be largely determined by how well I satisfied my primary customer, my boss. I therefore made a decision that whatever my boss asked for, I would do fast. And that made all the difference. Within a few months, I had a reputation with him for being the person that you gave the job to if you wanted it done quickly and well. When you get a reputation for doing things quickly and well, you will get more and more opportunities. The purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer. Well, how do you create and keep customers? You think continually in terms of what your product or service does to improve the life or work of your customers, and then you continually look for ways to do that better. You know that all products and services are really solutions to problems or satisfactions of needs. There are often ways to achieve particular goals that your customer has. And it's not what your product or service is, but only what it does that counts in the mind and heart of your customer. What is the biggest single complaint or dissatisfaction experienced by your customers? When you talk to them, what seems to be their major problem? As the doctor would ask, where does it hurt? There are thousands of companies throughout the United States who perform house cleaning services for working families. But Merry Maids has become a $500 million giant in the home house cleaning industry. How did they do it? Well, while most companies were selling house cleaning services, usually on the basis of price, Merry Maids repositioned themselves. They, in fact, did something new and unexpected in the marketplace. Instead of selling house cleaning services, they positioned themselves as sellers of leisure time. Instead of saying that they came in and cleaned houses better than their competitors, they instead offered to save homeowners several hours of weekend time that they would normally spend doing the housekeeping that had piled up during the week. For a few dollars on a Thursday or Friday, a couple could have an entire weekend free from the nitty-gritty concerns of household maintenance. Whereas people might have been uncertain or unsure about purchasing housekeeping services, most people had no problem at all making a decision in favor of increased leisure time. How could you reposition your product or service or your activities in such a way that they satisfy a deep underlying need or problem that your customers have? When you meet with your customers, always ask this question: how can we improve our services to you? Always ask them how you can serve them better next time. The rule is that if customers don't complain, it usually means that they are dissatisfied and thinking of going somewhere else. A complaining customer is a good customer as long as you take fast action on the complaint. Many companies make the mistake of asking the question, how are we doing? Or is everything okay? Customers don't want to fight with you or get into a confrontation. So when you ask them a bland question like that, they simply reply by saying, okay, fine, everything's okay. But when you ask, how can we do it better next time? Almost every customer will give you feedback and ideas that, if you act upon those ideas, can make you and your company the most successful in the industry. Another question you can ask is, how would we have to change, or what would we have to do to get more of or all of your business? More and more customers are deciding today to purchase from a single supplier. More and more companies are focusing on depth of customer rather than breadth of market. Keep asking your customers and asking each other what you would have to do to get 100% of your customers' business. What would you have to change or improve or add or take away or do differently in order to get all the business? A wonderful line that you can use for innovation and improvement in your product or service offerings is to say, "Mr. Customer, no product or service is perfect, including this one. What weaknesses do you see in our products and services, and how could we make them better next time?" When customers are honestly solicited for their ideas and opinions, and then you clearly take action on those ideas and opinions, customers become more loyal and determined to buy from you again in the future. In business, as in warfare, all strategy is formulated with reference to competitors, to the opposing side. It's not possible for you to sit and formulate a strategy all alone in a room. You must always be thinking about who you are competing against and what you can do to be superior to them. A very good exercise for increasing your capacity to improve the quality, quantity, and speed of your services to your customers is for you to analyze your major and minor competitors. Who are they? What are their major strengths? Why do customers prefer to buy from your competitors rather than buying from you? Remember, you can't hit a target you can't see. You can't achieve superiority in your marketplace if you don't know with tremendous clarity why it is that you're not already superior. Many individuals make the mistake of criticizing or denigrating their successful competitors. But this is not for you. You should admire your competitors. You should look at what they do and respect them for their success. Admiration and respect are the starting points of emulation, and emulation is the starting point of overtaking. Once you have identified who your competitors are and why they are doing better than you, begin to think in terms of how you could change your method of operation so that you could counter their perceived area of market superiority in some way. There is a cute story about a small furniture retailer in a large city who suddenly found himself squeezed between two giant multi-story furniture stores going up on either side of his small building. These companies had vastly more resources and a greater selection of furniture at discount prices. The two companies raced to finish their stores, and they both held their grand openings in the same week. Knowing that he could not compete with their advertising budgets on radio, television, and newspaper, the small furniture retailer instead went out, and with the mega stores on either side of him, he put up a huge sign that said, "Main Entrance," above his front doors. What can you do to counter the strengths of your rivals? How can you use deception, surprise, speed, and maneuver to create perceptions of unique added value in the minds of your customer? What can you do to offset the perceived competitive advantages of the companies that are outselling you to customers today? Or to ask it another way, what are your major weaknesses or vulnerabilities relative to your competitors? Be honest with yourself. No product or service is perfect, including yours. Where do you get the greatest number of complaints? What reasons do your customers give you for not buying your product or service today? And most importantly, what could you do to offset or to neutralize your vulnerabilities? Here's an exercise for you. Complete the sentence, "We could sell twice as much if it just wasn't for ... Think of every reason or objection that your customers give you for not buying more of your products or services, or for buying from your competitors instead of you. What could you do to neutralize, minimize, or downplay competitor strengths or your own vulnerabilities? Perhaps the best exercise of all is to imagine that you were starting your business or your sales activities over again today. If you could create your business or your sales career exactly the way you wanted it, without any obstacles or limitations, what would it look like? Define your ideal customers. What would you have to do to get more of them? How would you have to change your product or service offering so that you could dominate your market? What additional markets could you go into? What additional distribution channels could you use? How could you change or modify your product or service offerings to make them more attractive to more people? The answers to these questions are never final, and there are no answers that are guaranteed to work every time. Your job is to incorporate the principle of surprise, combined with creativity and innovation in your markets, into everything you do for the rest of your business career. Today, people want things done quickly, and your ability to respond fast to customer requests and requirements will do more to assure your success than perhaps any other factor. And just as jets go through the sound barrier by increasing their speed and rocket automobiles break the land sound barrier with increased speed, you can break your success barriers with increased speed as well. One of the great success writers of the 20th century, Orison Swett Marden, once wrote that the keys to success are first, get-to-itiveness, and second, stick-to-itiveness. The key to breaking your own success barriers is for you to decide exactly what it is you want and then launch toward it wholeheartedly and persist until you achieve it. The final principle of military strategy, or rule of success in war, is the principle of exploitation. Exploitation means that you follow up and follow through. You go all the way to the goal. You never let off the pressure or slow down until you have achieved your objective and overwhelmed it. It's absolutely amazing how many people work hard, and get 95% of the job done or the goal achieved, and then they back off, slow down, and relax. Then, for reasons completely outside their control, the goal slips out of their grasp, and they find themselves losing everything. George Cecil once wrote, "On the plains of hesitation bleach the bones of countless millions who, at the dawn of victory, sat down to wait, and waiting died." Throughout history, great battles have been won and then lost because of the failure of the commanding general to follow through and complete the victory. In World War I, when the British attempt to force the Dardanelles by sea and invade Turkey, the gunships involved bombarded the Turkish positions for hours while the Turks fired back with their artillery on the heights. But the Turkish gunners were running out of ammunition. The order finally came down to the Turkish gunners to break off the attack and surrender at 12 o'clock noon and turn the Gallipoli Peninsula over to the British forces. For some unknown reason, however, at 11 a.m., without being aware that they had almost won, the British called off the bombardment and sailed away. They then had to come back later with soldiers on the ground and launch the disastrous Gallipoli campaign, which cost the British and their allies 250,000 men and which ultimately failed. The failure to carry through for the one final hour led to one of the greatest military disasters of the 20th century. In World War II, Hitler launched Operation Barbarossa against the Soviet Union with 3 million crack German troops, supported by tanks and motorized infantry. At that time, Moscow was the railroad, highway, and communications hub, or heart, of the entire country. It was the critical objective of the campaign. The German armies sliced across Russia, demolishing all the resistance in their way. In Moscow, Stalin and the government were already preparing to evacuate and flee the capital. If Moscow fell to the Germans, all of Russia would collapse, and the Germans would have achieved an extraordinary victory on the Eastern Front, exactly as they had done in World War I. Then, as the German army approached Moscow, and advance forces had already penetrated into the outskirts of the city, the German high command decided to divide the army into 3 strike forces, with 1/3 of the army going north to attack Leningrad, and 1/3 of the army turning south to attack Stalingrad. The remaining 1/3 of the army was given the assignment of taking Moscow. The rest is history. Against a greatly diminished attacking force, the Russians threw every man and tank they had onto the defensive. Because of their weakened capability, the German army was stopped virtually at the gates of Moscow, turned back, and was never able to take the city. In addition, the armies assigned to assault Leningrad and Stalingrad were never able to take those cities either. None of the armies had sufficient strength in and of themselves. although as a single army, the German forces in Russia were unbeatable. The failure to take Moscow in 1941 and 1942 and the reinforcement of the Russian armies brought the advance on the Eastern Front to a halt. From that point on, Germany was forced to fight a war on two fronts against enemies with vastly superior resources of men and materiel. Operation Desert Storm in 1991 was an example of military brilliance, utilizing and employing all of the proven principles of strategic success in warfare. Only one was missing. It was the failure of the Allies to drive through to Baghdad and eliminate the Iraqi capability for making war again in the future. Now, there were many reasons for the decision by the Allies not to press the war to a final conclusion and to exploit their victory over the Iraqi forces in Kuwait. But the bottom line was that Saddam Hussein was left in power and much of the Iraqi military capability was left intact. In 1960, the Swiss Chronological Institute in Geneva developed the first quartz watch. At that time, there were 62,500 professional Swiss watchmakers, and Swiss watches were the most popular and most highly respected watches in the world. When the quartz watch was developed, it was dismissed by the traditional Swiss watchmakers as being a novelty that had no commercial applications. After all, it lacked the sophisticated internal workings of gears, springs, stems, and other mechanical parts that had to be included in a watch. The Japanese then came along and purchased the rights from the Swiss watchmaking industry to the quartz watch. They saw an opportunity to create watches that were highly accurate and inexpensive, as well as attractive. Within a decade, the Swiss watchmaking industry had been decimated. The number of Swiss watchmakers dropped from 62,500 to 12,500, and the Japanese took a commanding lead in the mass production of watches worldwide. The Swiss had the advantage originally, but they gave it up by failing to exploit it fully in the world market. There are countless examples where the failure to follow up and follow through has led to the complete loss of everything that had been won with so much time and treasure. In business, it's amazing how many companies come up with innovations and breakthroughs in products and services and then put them aside or fail to exploit them fully in a competitive marketplace. They're then astonished when competitive companies emerge into the marketplace with those same ideas and leapfrog over the competition and take a commanding lead in customer service and satisfaction. In 1959, Ford Motor Company brought out the Edsel, one of the biggest mistakes in car manufacturing history. By the time it was released into the marketplace, the market had changed, and the market demand for the Edsel turned out not to exist. Shortly after that, an engineer at Ford Motor Company came up with an idea for a minivan. Some people at Ford, including Lee Iacocca, who was the president at the time, thought that the minivan had tremendous potential. But far more people were afraid of making a mistake by committing to a new and untried product. They even said that if there was a real demand for a minivan, the car buyers of America would be writing to us and telling us that this is what they wanted. Of course, in a competitive market, it's quite common for a customer to have no idea of what he or she wants until the product is available. Iacocca moved on to assume the presidency of Chrysler and turned the company around. After a good deal of frustration, the engineers at Ford who had pioneered the minivan project came to Iacocca at Chrysler and asked if they would be interested. Lee Iacocca jumped on the project immediately, and Chrysler launched into the market with the first American minivans. Today, Chrysler Corporation has 50% of the American markets for the very popular minivans and earns billions of dollars of profit each year from sales. No other company has been able to catch up with them. They saw an opportunity, they took advantage of it, and they exploited it to the full. There's never been a better time, and there have never been more opportunities than there are today for you to achieve your goals and objectives faster and easier than ever before. You are literally surrounded by opportunities and possibilities that you only need to take advantage of and exploit to make breakthroughs that will enable you to accomplish more in the next few years than most people accomplish in a lifetime. But remember, opportunities usually come disguised as hard work. The opportunities may be all around you, but they are usually dressed in work clothes. Bruce Barton, the advertising executive, once wrote, "Most successful men have not achieved their distinction by having some new talent or opportunity presented to them. They have developed the opportunity that was at hand." Napoleon Hill found that successful men and women were masters at turning defeat into victory. He said that opportunity often comes disguised in the form of misfortune or temporary defeat. Napoleon Hill is also famous for his observation that within every setback or disappointment lies the seed of an equal or greater advantage or benefit. Your job is to find it. Francis Bacon said that a wise man will make more opportunities than he finds. And the fact is that you are surrounded by opportunities, but you must recognize them, seize them, and take advantage of them. And once you have your opportunity, you must run with it and follow through on it to completion. This is usually the hardest thing of all. When the farmer has sown the seeds and carefully cultivated the crop, and the fall comes and the crop is ready, how much does the farmer harvest? And the answer is, all he can. How much do you sell? All you can. How long do you persist? As long as it takes. How much do you develop and exploit every opportunity that comes to you? As much as you can. To find your opportunities for exploitation and development, look around you. Look within yourself. What are your unique talents and abilities? What is it that the world needs that you are uniquely suited to give to it? What is it that you do better than anyone else? What has been most responsible for your success in life to date? What do you most enjoy doing? What do you do easily and well that is often difficult for others? Looking back over your life, what activities and what accomplishments have given you the greatest amount of satisfaction and happiness? Luck is always a matter of probabilities. The more different things you try, the more likely it is that you will triumph. Luck comes from intelligently trying as many different things as possible. It comes from learning as many different things as possible. It comes from accepting feedback and self-correcting as often as possible, and then persisting with indomitable willpower until you finally break through. The good news is that your chances of great success are extremely high if you know what you want, put your whole heart into it, and then persist until you succeed. Once you get your opportunity or breakthrough, that's the time to redouble your efforts and increase the pressure rather than to sit back and relax. In the darkest days of World War II in wartime England, Winston Churchill was being urged to seek an accommodation with the Germans. This he refused to do. When he was confronted with the fact that the Germans had overwhelming military superiority in Europe, and at the same time the Americans had made it clear they would not get involved again in a land war in Europe, why was it that Churchill refused to seek some kind of peace agreement to end the war? Churchill was a student of history. He said that something will happen to bring America into the war, and that will turn the tide. When he was asked why he was so confident that something like that would happen, he said, "Because I've studied history, and history says that if you persist long enough, something always happens." Shortly after that, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and Germany declared war on America. The rest is history. Sometimes luck comes to you as a result of your persisting at what you are doing until the tables finally turn and you get your chance. In fact, a streak of bad luck is often followed by a streak of good luck. A sales slump is often followed by a sales boom. But it's absolutely essential that at the darkest time, you redouble your efforts and recommit yourself to keep on keeping on with your whole heart. Remember, opportunities multiply as they are seized. The more you exploit an opportunity, the more opportunities open up for you. As you move toward your goal, you begin to see possibilities that were invisible before you began your forward motion. Look around you at the possible opportunities in your environment. Of all the different things that you could possibly be doing, what are the 20% of activities that could potentially represent 80% of your success? What are the major customer, product, service, or promotional breakthroughs that you could achieve that could have an enormous impact on your business or your sales activities? You know that success in your marketplace comes from differentiating yourself in a meaningful way from your competitors. It comes from becoming very, very good at what you do. In your business, market success is based solely on your area of competitive advantage, your area of excellence. The question is always, what is it that you do or can do in an excellent fashion? Where can you gain and keep market superiority? What is the one thing that you can do right now that can make the greatest single difference to your success in the future? In selling, for many years, it was quite common for people to say that the sale begins when the customer says no. However, today we know that the sale begins when the customer says yes. When the customer finally agrees to buy your product or service, that is where the real work begins. Now you must redouble your efforts to make sure that this sale goes together and stays together. Many people take a sale 95% of the way to closing and then lose it at the last minute. Why is this? Well, based on interviews with thousands of customers, we find that each customer goes through a motivation dip immediately after having made the purchase decision. Sometimes this is called buyer's remorse. What happens is that the customer begins to think of all the difficulties, all the problems, and all the inconvenience involved in buying and using the new product or service. It's at this point that the customer needs the greatest amount of hand-holding and support by the sales professional. It is at this point that the customer will begin to lose heart and to question his or her decision. This is why you must redouble your efforts at the moment that your customer has decided to proceed. The very best strategy is for you to do something immediately to reassure the customer that he or she has made a good decision. This can be a phone call, a visit, a letter, an additional exercise in customer satisfaction or customer delight, or something else. But the more important the sale, the more important it is that you reinforce it immediately after the customer has made the decision to proceed. Over the course of my career, I've made the mistake of working very, very hard to put together a sale. When the customer finally agreed to proceed, I have breathed a great sigh of relief, turned my attention to other customers, or gone home for the weekend. Then, when I called the customer back a few days later, the customer had changed his or her mind completely, and I was never able to resurrect the sale. The very best time to get a referral from a customer is immediately after the customer has bought. When a customer makes a buying decision, he or she has gone through a process of rationalization and justification to assure himself or herself that this is the right thing to do. When you ask for a reference or a referral, they will often encourage you to offer the same product or service to someone else they know. A referral is worth 10 or 20 times a cold call. When you walk in with a referral, you are 80% of the way to the sale already. So when you make a sale, you should exploit and develop the customer in depth. Immediately look beyond the first sale at the second, the third, and even the fourth sale. Once the customer is signed on the dotted line, begin to think immediately of how you could sell more products and services to the same customer, to the customer's company, to the customer's friends or family. One woman in my seminar who did this very skillfully tracked 72 additional sales from one satisfied customer within a single one-year period. Here's another example or opportunity for exploitation and development. Similar customers have similar motivations and similar needs. If you can identify a particular customer in a particular industry, position, occupation, or situation, and then sell him or her your product or service, you will have learned something vital and important. You will have learned how to sell to similar people to the customer you have just closed. Often you'll find that you make a sale to a person who works in a particular industry. However, to make the sale, you'll have to learn a good deal about that industry and how it functions. Now, however, you have a knowledge base. Now you can take that same skill, that same knowledge, and turn to another individual in the same industry, only with the ability to work at an even higher level. Remember, your knowledge of your customer's business activities is your stock in trade as a salesperson. The more you know about the functioning of your customer's life and business, the easier it is for you to sell to that particular type of customer. There are lists available of all the companies in every major industry in your community. Sometimes you can get a detailed list of the top 50 companies, starting from the largest and going to the smallest. One strategy that you can use is to determine that your product or service can be used in a particular industry, and then call on the company that is number 50 on the list in terms of the size in your community. Whether or not that customer buys, you will learn something valuable that will enable you to be more confident when you call on number 49. After you've called on customer number 49, whether or not he or she buys, you can then proceed to call customer number 48 and 47 and so on. By the time you've spoken to 5 or 10 small companies in a particular industry, you will have become a mini expert in that industry. You will find it easier and easier to get appointments with key decision makers with even larger companies and to make the critical arguments that can lead to more and more sales in that industry. In business, you must continually be asking your customers why it is that they buy from you. What is it that they like the most about what you do? Why is it that your customers prefer to deal with you rather than with your competitors? These particular reasons represent your greatest opportunities for exploitation and development in your marketplace. A friend of mine got into the life insurance industry some years ago. He reached the simple conclusion quite quickly that people who had more money were better prospects than people who had less money. And he concluded that doctors and other medical professionals had a high, consistent, and predictable level of income. If he could sell to medical professionals, he could create quite a business for himself. But instead of calling on doctors and dentists out of the yellow pages, as most other representatives did, he began a detailed research process that eventually took him 2 years. He learned everything that there was to know about the way that the finances of medical professionals were structured. He read books and attended medical conventions. He interviewed countless medical professionals and talked to other people who had medical professionals as clients. Eventually, he was asked to speak on financial planning to groups of doctors. Soon, he was recognized as a financial planning and insurance expert for people who learned their living in one of the medical professions. The business began to flow to him like a river. Within a few years, he was one of the highest paid professionals in his industry in the world. And it was because he had used the twin ideas of seeking out an opportunity area and then exploiting it to the full by becoming an expert in that area. People always want to buy from the experts. People always want to deal with the companies that they think are the best companies in the industry in terms of their particular wants and needs. According to the studies at Harvard University, companies that are recognized as having the highest levels of quality are the companies that sell the most and sell the easiest. They can also charge the most, and they earn the highest profit margins. The highest quality companies also grow the most rapidly, attract and keep the best people, and pay the best salaries. The quality rating of any company is the most important single determining factor in the success of that company and in the success of the individuals who work for that company. When they interview thousands of customers to ask them for their definitions of quality, the customers responded by saying that quality was really a combination of the product itself and the way that the product was actually sold and serviced. It was not only what the company offered the customer directly, but it was the temperament, mood, and personality of the people delivering the product or service that combined to give a company its particular quality rating. Here is a great question for you. What is your quality rating in your marketplace? If an outside firm were to come in and do an independent study, asking customers in your marketplace which company they thought was the very best, how would your company rate? Let us say that your company is one of 10 major competitors offering the same product or service in your marketplace. Intuitively, what do you think your quality rating would be on a score of 1 to 10 if customers in the marketplace were surveyed and asked to rate your company against your competitors? Remember the story about how Nordstrom's was rated the number one department store in Phoenix, even though there was no Nordstrom store in Phoenix? What is your quality rating? Whatever it is, it's essential that you are honest and objective about this ranking. If you're number 5 out of 10, you should accept that as a fact, at least temporarily. This then becomes your baseline. This becomes your starting point. Whatever your quality ranking is today, accept it and then make a decision to improve it by one ranking. So, if you're number 5 out of 10 companies in your industry, make a decision to become ranked as company number 4 sometime in the future. It's unrealistic to attempt to go from number 5 to number 1, but it's well within your reach, given enough time and commitment, for you to go from number 5 to number 4. You then ask your customers and yourselves how your customers define quality. The true meaning of quality in its simplest form is that your product does what you say it will do and continues to do it. The percentage of time that your product or service delivers on the promises that you make to sell it is the percentage of quality that you offer to your marketplace. Once you've decided to improve your quality ranking, you make specific decisions about things that you're going to do to increase or improve your customers' perception of your organization and the products and services that it sells. For example, do customers consider speed of delivery a factor in quality? If they do, resolve today to deliver your products faster than they are being delivered currently. Do your customers consider convenience of use a quality factor? What about speed of responsiveness or politeness on the telephone? Do your customers value the importance of accurate billing and quick replies to questions with regard to cost and price? Do your customers value follow-up service and support? Once you find out what it is that your customers want and need and are willing to pay for, you should exploit this to the full. You should take every opportunity to not only improve in those critical areas, but to advertise, promote, and sell to other customers how good you really are in those areas that mean so much. A Rolex watch can cost many thousands of dollars. But Rolex is not sold as a timepiece. Rolex is sold as a status symbol. Rolex has managed to position itself as the watch you wear to tell other people that you have arrived. Wearing a Rolex watch makes a statement to the people around you that you are a successful, prosperous person. And people are willing to pay many thousands of dollars to make that statement. Why is it that people buy your product or service? How could you exploit and develop that market advantage to leapfrog ahead? Remember, opportunities are like windows. They open and close. When you have an idea or an insight to be more successful, when you get a recommendation or a referral, when you read a new idea or concept, when a window of opportunity seems to be opening for you, dive through it quickly, because it will close again just as fast as it opened in the first place. After Bill Gates had started Microsoft Corporation in Bellevue, Washington, he was asked by IBM to develop an operating system for the new personal computer. Microsoft neither had an operating system, nor did it have the time to develop what IBM wanted on schedule. But Bill Gates said, sure, right away, and then began looking around for someone, anyone, who had already done the heavy work of developing a computer operating system. He found a small company in Seattle that had developed an operating system and bought it outright for $50,000. The company had invested an enormous amount of time and energy in developing the system, but had no market for it. Gates did not have the system, but he had the market. It was a match that worked out perfectly for both of them. This system became the MS-DOS, or Microsoft Disk Operating System, that is now built into 90% of the world's personal computers. By seizing an opportunity and running with it, figuring out how to make it work as he went along, Bill Gates has become the richest man in the world. Now, you may not become extremely wealthy, but you can definitely become extremely successful by doing what all other successful people have done before you. By using these thinking tools, practiced by the greatest leaders in history, operating in the most turbulent conditions, you can dramatically increase your effectiveness in everything you do as well. Begin with the principle of the objective. Decide exactly what it is you want. Write it down. Make a plan, and then work on your plan every single day. Practice the principle of the offensive. Action orientation is the hallmark of all successful people. Throw your whole heart into what you are doing and become a moving target. All great battles are won on the offensive. Seize the initiative and keep on the attack. Mass and concentrate your powers. Focus single-mindedly on one thing, the most important thing, and stay with it until it's done. Simplify your life and your work. Cut out all extraneous activities. Delegate, eliminate, consolidate, outsource, and discontinue things that no longer contribute significant value to your life or to your goals. Practice the principle of unity of command. Be a leader. Take charge. Seize the initiative again. Make a decision, then another, then another. Learn from your decisions. Accept feedback and self-correct. Remember that you are where you are and what you are because of yourself. You're in charge of your own life and your own future. Use the principle of concerted action. Work well with other people and leverage the talents and skills of others to help you to achieve your goals. Associate with winners. Associate with positive people who are going somewhere with their lives. Always look for ways to help others to achieve their goals, and they will always be open to helping you to achieve yours. The principle of intelligence means learn all you can and become very, very good at what you do. Get the facts. You can never have too much information or too many ideas in your field. Read, listen to audio programs, and take courses regularly. Ask questions, listen carefully, make notes. One good idea is all you need to change your entire life. Use the principle of the maneuver. Be fast on your feet. Try something new. Try it again, and then try something else. Look for ways to do things differently, to come at your problems and opportunities from a different angle than the average person. Be willing to consider the possibility that you could be completely wrong in your most cherished assumptions or in your most habitual behaviors. Remember, the answers all around you are changing, and your answers are changing as well. Always be willing to say, I could be wrong, I often am, because you often are. Practice the principle of security. Minimize your costs. Sometimes success in life is simply a matter of continually moving forward and then making sure that nothing happens to move you backward. Always be looking for ways to achieve your objectives with a minimum expenditure of time and energy. Always focus on the one or two things that you can do that can make all the difference. And don't waste your precious energies on low-value activities. As Goethe said, the things that matter most must never be at the mercy of the things that matter least. Practice the principle of economy. Make a decision to become financially independent in the course of your working lifetime, and then organize your financial resources so that you achieve your goal on schedule. Practice the principle of surprise. Do the unexpected. Always be looking for faster, newer, easier, different ways to accomplish the same objective. Remember, if it works, it's already obsolete. whatever is already getting old. The only constant in life today is change, and the rate of change is accelerating. Your ability to be creative and innovative, to find different ways to serve your customers better and faster, is the key to your breaking through all the barriers to success in your industry. Finally, use the principle of exploitation. Follow up and follow through. Make a commitment today that you are going to fulfill your full potential as a person. Make the decision today that you are going to become everything that you are capable of becoming. As we move into the 21st century, we are entering into the golden age of mankind. We are entering into a period where more people will accomplish more wonderful goals than have ever been accomplished or dreamed of in all the history of man. There are no limits on what you can accomplish except the limits that you place on your own mind. And it doesn't matter where you're coming from. All that really matters is where you're going. And where you're going is limited only by your own imagination. Perhaps the most important thing to remember in the weeks, months, and years ahead is that you can learn anything you need to learn to achieve any goal you can set for yourself. As Shakespeare said, all of past is merely prelude. Anything that anyone else has done, you can do as well. Any goals that others have achieved, you can achieve as well. There are no limits on what you can do, have, and be when you take complete control over your life and your future destiny and resolve right here, right now, to crash through any success barriers that stand in your way. Good luck.